time for The Outspoken Cyclist, the weekly conversation about cycles, cyclists, travel, trails, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. WJCU broadcasts and streams The Outspoken Cyclist on-air show at 8 a.m. every Saturday morning. In Northeast Ohio, tune in to 88.7 FM, or worldwide, listen in at WJCU.org. Our weekly podcast is available at the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, or download it with your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for March 13th, 2021, the beginning of daylight savings time, which means more daylight so you can go for a ride. In a mini tribute to Women's History Month, this week's show highlights a woman-owned tour company and a woman from history who changed the face of bicycling while adding to the rich history of women's emancipation at the turn of the last century. Barb Hoyt is the owner and visionary of Timberline Adventures Touring Company. While she is not the original owner, she became so with a passion for adventures and expanded the company from mostly west of the Mississippi to covering much of the U.S. Although COVID curtailed most of 2020, Barb is ramping up some great adventures for 2021, including a 60-day, four-section tour of the East Coast Greenway all the way from Maine to Key West. Barb Hoyt will be with me in the second half of the show. My first guest is Victoria Monroe. Victoria is the executive director of the Alice Austin House on Staten Island in New York City. Alice Austin was a prolific photographer at the turn of the last century. She documented New York City and especially the lives of lesbian women. Her photographs of women and bicycles appeared in the original book Bicycling for Ladies, published in 1896 by Maria Ward, who was better known by the name of Violet. The book covers topics from skills and exercise to mechanics and dress and gives us a glimpse into what freedom for women began to look like over 100 years ago. Here is my conversation with Victoria. Hello, Victoria. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, I'm delighted. Number one, I just learned that you have this fabulous accent, which I love, and everybody loves it. Everybody in the U.S., I think, loves an Australian or
New Zealand accent. That's okay.
A down under accent. How's that?
That's perfect.
And I'm really excited about the book we're going to talk about. So when the book came into the house, and it's called Bicycling for Ladies, it's actually from 1896, but this is a new edition of it. My husband picked it up. Now, we're both in the bicycle business, have been for, you know, many, many, many years. And he went, oh my God, this is awesome. I said, well, listen in this week. We're going to talk about it. So I'm really excited about this book. Let's talk a little bit about you. You're the executive director of the Alice Austin House on Staten Island. Who was Alice Austin and how was she kind of connected to this story?
Well, Alice Austin was born in 1866. She was a Victorian woman. She was a photographer, and she took nearly 8,000 photographs of a changing New York City and the social lives and activities of her Victorian friends. Alice was also a lesbian, and her historic record that she has left for us provides us with a really intimate insight into the social activities of Victorian women, and in particular her lesbian circle of friends. And how she's connected to this book is that she actually took the photographs which all of the illustrations are based upon. And this book, Bicycling for Ladies, is a very beautiful book in its original edition and the new edition, and is richly illustrated. And there's a lot more to it than that. Alice was very close friends with the author and also the model for the photographs, which we can talk about more.
Sure. Well, the book is beautiful. It is a nice sized book. And I'm thinking that maybe books of that era were small. It's sort of like 8.5, 5.5, somewhere in there.
Yeah, so the original edition from 1896 has this beautiful blue cover that's embossed with gold, and it has a really, really fun image on the cover of a woman riding all alone down a country lane, kicking her feet in the air and showing her knickers, if you like, her bloomers. That in itself is incredibly enticing, and in 1896 you really weren't supposed to show even an ankle. So it's this real depiction of a woman being very free, enjoying the bicycle, and of course unchaperoned.
Right. Oh yeah, the mores of those days. So I just want to back up one second and talk about the Alice Austin House. You're the executive director.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's a museum, I take it, and?
It is. So it's one of 23 historic houses in New York City. The original structure was built in 1690, and it was purchased by Alice Austin's grandfather in 1844. And the family moved in full-time after they lost a few children. They were living in Manhattan. It was originally supposed to be a holiday home. And her grandfather lovingly extended the home and made it into this really gorgeous Gothic Victorian cottage. And it sits right on the waterfront in Staten Island, looking out to Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Hoboken, New Jersey.
When did it become a museum?
It became a museum in the 1980s. It was saved from demolition in the 60s and became the property of New York City Parks Department.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And it got landmark status, national landmark status, but it wasn't until 2017 that the landmark status was amended, and we are now a national LGBTQ site significance.
Wow, that's interesting.
So that's really something. So we are a living, breathing photographic museum, obviously dedicated to the life and work of Alice Austin. And we also maintain two contemporary galleries in the house and have three changing exhibitions per year.
So I'm taking it you were pretty much closed for 2020?
Yes and no. We obviously, like so many institutions, converted all of our offerings virtually.
Right.
But we did reopen our doors at the beginning of September, and we have the model that is timed entry. So you go onto the website and you book a time, and so we're just open Tuesday through Friday for timed tours.
Let me reintroduce you. We're speaking with Victoria Monroe. She is the executive director of the Alice Austin House on Staten Island in New York City. And we're really here to talk about a book, Bicycling for Ladies, although I find the Alice Austin story really interesting. But I do want to talk about it. It's the classic 1896 guide to skills, exercise, mechanics, and dress. That's pretty succinct there. So we know how the bicycle became a really important part of women's suffrage, women's freedom. How does this book fit into that narrative? So fit this book into how things were going at the time Maria Ward wrote it.
Okay, so Maria Ward, if we sort of want to start there.
Right.
Who went by Violet. She was given that nickname because when she was a baby, her eyes looked violet in color. She was a woman, her and her sister, that they never married. They never had children. And she was a very close friend of Alice Austin and Daisy Elliott, who I mentioned before, who was the model. And these women really embraced this, what would be termed lifestyle of the new woman of the era. So they were really celebrating a lot of newfound freedoms. And the bicycle sits really interestingly in that history, because it was really one of the, as a socially accepted thing for women to do and learn, it provided these other really essential freedoms, which were that women could go out on a bicycle unchaperoned. So they were free from the constraints of needing to have a male with them. They also, it encouraged freedom of dress, so more comfortable clothing, things like bloomers rather than skirts, and a loosening up around the waistline so that they could exercise more freely. So these were all major markers of the struggle towards being more independent as a woman. And even in the same year that the book was published, Susan B. Anthony had written in an article that was published in the New World. She wrote that bicycling had done more to emancipate women than anything else in the world. So it's very inseparable, these things, to our understanding of women's history and women's freedoms. You go.
Well, I was just going to ask a question about how Violet figured out all these mechanical things, because there's a lot in here where even today women don't do a lot of the things that she apparently was willing to do with a bicycle. Things about the actual taking care of a bike and not just dress, but I mean, just some really things that, I don't know. I mean, now I know how to do it, but I worked in a bike shop for years. So,
Well, so the safety bike, or, you know, the bicycle that is really included in this book, which was what really pushed forth this craze for bicycling, it was a very new invention. And so this was sort of very new technology. And what's interesting about Violet and her friends like Alice Austin, they were all intensely interested in new technologies and very, very determined to learn exactly how everything worked and how to maintain them. And I know that Alice Austin was the first woman on Staten Island to own a car, and she would fix it herself, and she carried around a toolkit. So the book, which goes quite in depth on how to maintain your bicycle and what have you, and the understanding the workings, what we do know is certainly these women were very enthusiastic about learning all of these things. What I don't have documentation on is exactly how Violet learned all of these things, but in the Ward papers, she was consistently reaching out to bicycle manufacturers and asking them for information on each component of the bicycle.
How interesting. Well, the chapter 13, Women and Tools, it's sort of like a non sequitur, but it's
so
awesome. And then chapter 14, Tools and How to Use Them. So your publisher, Greg, mentioned that the book has a lot of humor in it. Now, because I got the book really late, I wanted to get this out on the air sooner rather than later, because it's coming up for publication on the 23rd. That's when people will be able to get a copy. So I wanted to make sure that you and I had this conversation. Give us maybe an example of something kind of funny from the book.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I'm not sure that humor was necessarily Violet's intention. And I think that possibly in reading it today, we can find definitely a lot of amusement in the writing. I think of it more as being intensely interesting, the way that certain language is sort of coded around being free, learning to ride the wheel, and that it was an extremely intelligent thing to do. And it's really, really important to know that these were queer women. And I think that it's super interesting to think about this book as a potential connector for these women. So I was re-looking at the book before. It's always good to revisit it again and again. But I don't sort of see these things as particularly funny, and that's my own reading. Yeah. But I was pulling out a few things, and I think that it is really interesting when you sort of hear Violet's voice when she's talking about cycling. And I think this is where he thinks maybe found humor in it, because it is amusing, where she discusses it as supplying a new pleasure. And things like riding the wheel, our own powers are revealed to us, a new sense seemingly created, and talking about awakening observations and thrills and delights. I think that all of those things are quite humorous to us now, and especially when we can read it understanding more about who these women were. And she talks all about invigoration and the spirit being refreshed and the mind free from care and all of these kind of wonderful, quite poetic kind of things that she attributes to the experience of bicycling.
It's interesting that while this book is over 100 years old, it certainly seems to have a place right now in history. You know, as we go through this whole changing of the way people think about certain things, like LGBTQ, like Black Lives Matter, like all of it, suddenly this book becomes pretty relevant in many ways.
It does. And, you know, and we're seeing such a resurgence of interest in bicycle culture and what that also means for us now as a mode of transportation that's better for our environment, that, so many things on so many levels. So I think that definitely it's a really interesting time for this book to be republished and re-envisioned in a way. And I felt extremely fortunate that they asked me to write the foreword, because I really did want it to be understood within some of these contexts.
Well, it's delightful. I like it, just holding it, because it's just a comfortable book. It's got a great illustration on the front. It's got wonderful illustrations throughout. We've been speaking with Victoria Monroe. She is the executive director of the Alice Austin House in Staten Island, New York. The book is Bicycling for Ladies, the Classic 1896 Guide to Skills, Exercise, Mechanics, and Dress. It was by Maria E. Ward, photography support by Alice Austin, at two clearly very interesting women of their day. So, Victoria, tell my listeners how, when it's available on the 23rd, they'll be able to get a copy.
Yeah, you can already pre-order it, but definitely it's on Amazon and it's on the Apollo Books website. And as soon as you would do a search for Bicycling for Ladies, it'll come right up for you. So you can go ahead right now and order your copy. It's incredibly well priced as well at $16.99. So it's not going to leave too much of a dent in your wallet. And I think that if you are a bicycling enthusiast, obviously that's going to appeal. If you are interested in women's history, it's a fantastic book to add to your collection. And if you have interest in LGBTQ history, particularly lesbian histories, I think it's a must own. And I think for your listeners also, when we're talking about the illustrations and the model Daisy Elliott, it's interesting to note that Daisy and Austin were actually lovers at this moment. Austin would go on to meet the love of her life in 1899 and spend 53 years in a relationship with Gertrude Tate. But these are all wonderful things, and we have letters and correspondence around this time and the events that were happening in these women's lives.
Well, I really appreciate you telling me the story of the story and talking to me about the book. I'm really proud to have it on my shelf. I mean, you know, I get lots and lots of books to review. This one's pretty special. So I hope you sell lots of books. I hope people learn about the Alice Austin House, and you'll be able to welcome people in your normal fashion after everybody gets a vaccine this year. And thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh, thank you very much. It was lovely to meet you in this space.
You too. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Victoria Monroe is the executive director of the Alice Austin House on Staten Island in New York City. Victoria wrote the foreword for the reprinting of Maria Ward's book, Bicycling for Ladies. If you're interested in a copy of the book, which will start shipping on the 23rd, you can pre-order it today. So let's take a break, and when we return, we'll speak with Timberline Adventures touring company owner Barb Hoyt. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
A bicycle crash is not an accident. And when you find yourself in a situation that calls for experienced, effective, and positive legal support and advocacy, you can depend on any of North America's independent bike law members. Bike Law's cycling attorneys are members of our community committed to the pursuit of cycling safety and justice. For more information about Bike Law, log on to bikelaw.com. They're on your left, protecting your rights. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. Barb Hoyt is the owner of Timberline Adventures out of Boulder, Colorado. Specializing in small groups, usually just 6 to 12 people, the tours offer the cyclist or hiker a full day of adventure with great support accompanied by inviting accommodations. You'll hear from our conversation Barb's passion for the company and the adventures she offers. Hi, Barb. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
How's Boulder today?
Well, a little chilly today, but supposed to warm up into cycling weather by tomorrow.
Well, chilly is relative. In Northeast Ohio, chilly is like, you know, 20 degrees. But it's cold here. So the first order of business is some background on your company, Timberline Adventures. And then I want to talk about you have lots of options, lots of tours. And there are a couple in specifically I want to talk about. So tell us a little bit about Timberline Adventures.
Timberline is about to celebrate its 40th birthday during next year's season. And you'll be hearing a lot about that if you are anything in tune with Timberline. We'll be having lots of promotions and specials and be talking about our 40th birthday. So it was started back in 1982 by a couple, Dick and Carol Gottsagen. First by Dick, he just wanted to get out and bike, and he found some people to go with him, and then he got joined by Carol, and they ran the company for 25 years. Unfortunately, Dick got cancer. And so they sold the company to another couple, and he did eventually pass away. And that other couple ran Timberline for a few years and then sold it to me. Now, Carol Gottsagen is still a tour guide that works for me. She has not been able to let go. She loves the hiking and the cycling so much that she's going to hang on as long as she can.
Good for her, actually. Good for her.
She's an amazing lady.
I'm sure. And it's too bad about her husband, but, you know, they started something clearly that's been very popular, because to continue after, since 1982, that's a long haul these days. And I think it says a lot about the company.
It's a long time and a lot has changed since then.
Well, that's probably true too. I want to go just back to 2020, which was such a horrific year for everybody. What did Timberline, what was it able to do in 2020? And then we'll look at maybe the rosier picture of 2021.
Sure. 2020, you know, as you can expect, was not what one would hope the year would be. But on the positive side, what we do is we run tours outdoors. And that's about the only thing you could do still in 2020. So when it hit us in March, we had to shut down. We shut down for 3 months, March, April, May, nothing happened. In June, we started reopening, and we were able to run just a small number of tours with a very small number of people. Now, we often run small tours with maybe as few as 4 guests, and typically our maximum is 12 guests on a tour. So they're always small anyway. They never got as large as 12 in 2020, but I was able to take people to a number of national parks. We did a great bicycling tour in Michigan. You know, we were able to take those people who were comfortable enough to attempt to get out there, and we held very strict protocols on dealing with the pandemic as far as eating outside and wearing masks in the van and that sort of thing. So we were able to service a few people, not nearly as many as we would like, but they got that experience and we're still going.
So how's 2021 looking?
It's starting to look up. It's still been a little slow. Took a few people down to the Florida Keys earlier this month, and I have a few other things going on, but I'm just now starting to get more interest from people. I definitely have had long-term customers who have talked to me and said, as soon as I get those shots in my arm, we'll be calling you up. And, you know, that's just starting to happen with so many of them.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask. Will you mandate vaccines, or are you thinking that it'll just still be a combination of people who have been vaccinated and those who just will practice whatever, you know, protocols you're going to put in place and keep in place?
Right. I don't really see myself mandating that. That runs into a lot of problems on its own. I will be asking people whether they've had the vaccine or not so we can, you know, assess where we're at. And certainly for the next couple months, anything that I run, whether people are vaccinated or not, I will continue with my very strict protocols, even down in Texas. You know, we'll be following all the rules that the CDC has put out that will keep us safe. We want to be here for a long time and we want our guests to be safe and happy. So we're going to continue to follow our protocols for dealing with the COVID-19 for several months now, and we'll just have to reassess as time goes on.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce you. We're speaking with Barb Hoyt. She's the owner of Timberline Adventures, and I assume you still lead tours yourself.
I do. One of the great things about taking over a company like this is that I get to get out there some myself. I don't see why I would want to run this company if I were sitting behind a desk the whole time. that would not be fun. You know, we're a big enough company that I've got, you know, a dozen guys working for me. They're from all over the country and they have all kinds of different experiences, but we're small enough that I can go out there myself. I do a lot of scouting on my own, which is great. And then I lead some of the tours as well. And I get to take the guests out. I get to know who my guests are. You know, when somebody calls up and says, I'm signed up for this tour, I'll say, hey, I know exactly who you are. You know, I did this tour with you 3 years ago. And let's talk about what will match your abilities best.
You know, that's an interesting point, one that I hadn't really planned on talking with you about, and that is repeat customers, people who come back again and again because they like the company, they like the tours, they like the way you run them. What is your incidence of repeat customers, at least up until 2020?
It's very high. We have people who have taken upwards of 25 tours with Timberline, and I'd say 70-80% of my guests are returning customers. And we offer a discount even if, you know, your only tour was back in 1983. If you come back to me and say, yeah, I did a tour then we've got that returning guest discount. One of the things we do best is take people on the miles. We focus on the truly active adventurer, and there are some people out there that are so happy to see a tour that will take them on 15 miles in a day or 95 miles of biking. Now, not all of our tours are like that, but we do have tours where you can sign up if you really want to go, rather than say, do 10 miles and stop at the bar and call it good.
So active seniors, is that one of your sort of pocket people?
We definitely have a lot of seniors on our tours. I mean, they typically have more time and they have the money to spend on a fully supported tour, but that's not all that we deal with. I would say we're not really geared towards the younger 20s and 30 crowds, just because for the most part, they don't have the time to be able to go out and do these things. So our guests are like 40 to 80.
Wow, that's really my demographic for my yoga. Exactly. That's interesting. Yeah, people seem to have some time and they're still interested in staying in shape and
right.
being fit and having fun. So I also didn't plan on asking you this, but I want to ask you also, what about e-bikes? Is that starting to be part of your, do you rent bikes, number one?
I do have a fleet of bikes, and that includes some e-bikes.
Nice.
And we do have those as an option. The kind of bikes that I allow are the kind that are pedal assist, meaning I'm not going to allow any bike where you can just throttle and keep up with everyone. It's a great way for, say, a husband and wife team when they don't bike at the same level to be able to do this tour together. The slower one can get a boost when needed and keep up and enjoy the whole experience.
So I want to talk about some of your longer tours because you offer some what you call odysseys. And one that has a special interest for me because I'm on the advisory board for the East Coast Greenway is a complete East Coast Greenway tour. You're going to go from Maine to Florida. Is that true?
That is true the whole way, about 3,000 miles.
That's awesome. So tell us about that tour and how you decided to come up with it and maybe just a little bit about that route.
Sure. I'm really excited about this tour. You know, the company, I said, we're nearly 40 years old. It really was focused on the West for a lot of years, and that's where the original owners felt really comfortable. When I took over, I grew up in the East, so I've been spreading things a little bit farther east in general, offering tours in the Adirondack Mountains and that sort of thing. And I actually just read an article about the East Coast Greenway. I wasn't very familiar with it before and started looking more into it because it intrigued me and found out that there is an alliance, the East Coast Greenway Alliance, that is trying to put together an all off-road route that takes you from the Maine Canada border down to Key West. And that was really exciting to me. I said, wow, that would be so cool and so very different from the things that we've done in the past. You're going through major metropolitan areas. You're going through where, you know, most of the people of the entire country live. And how do you do that? Well, you hook together a whole lot of greenways that are already built and just designate a route and say, this is how we can do it. There's still working on the route. So it hasn't been, you know, all of the miles are not completely off-road. That's their eventual goal. But the Alliance is 20 years old right now. So they've been working on it for a while. So we're at the point where we've really got a good system going and it's the perfect opportunity. And then when I found out that fewer than 100 people have ever done end-to-end on the Greenway, I said, well, I want to get in on this.
Right.
So I will be the very first commercially run, fully supported tour that goes end-to-end on the East Coast Greenway. Nobody has ever done this as a commercially offered tour before. That's just thrilling to me. I mean, how many times can you say, hey, I'm doing one of the first?
How long will this tour take to do?
It's a 60-day tour.
Okay.
And it's divided into four segments. each segment has a layover day in the middle of it, and each segment has a layover day on either end. So you can come and go on the tour. You don't have to do the whole thing. If you do the whole thing, then you've got, you know, another day of rest in between those segments. So the first segment goes from the main Canada border to New York City. The second segment goes from New York City to Raleigh. And the third segment goes from there to Savannah. And the fourth segment ends down at Key West.
So that brings to mind a question about accommodations. What kind of accommodations will they be staying in during this tour? Or will they be a variety, there be a variety of them?
A little variety. First of all, we don't do any camping. So it's all in hotels. Absolutely. And we do have a variety of accommodations available. Mostly what we try to look for is the local places that really, really exude the character of the area that we're in. So we'll do a lot of pretty unique places along the way. You know, occasionally we have to go to those chain hotels because that's what's available. And occasionally, I'm thinking of this little lake in the middle of North Carolina where there's nothing around and it's just a little motel on the lake. So, you know, there will be some pretty unique places we stay. I'm also running this tour a little bit larger than my typical one. Usually I said we go up to 12 people. I'm running this tour with 25. So it'll be a slightly larger group, and trying to house that many people at once presents its own challenges.
Let me take another moment to reintroduce you, and then I have a couple of more questions about this tour and a few of the other things that we haven't talked about. I'm speaking with Barb Hoyt. She's the owner of Timberline Adventures. We've been talking about an East Coast Greenway tour, and everybody who listens to the show regularly knows I have a special place in my heart for the East Coast Greenway. Are people already signing up for this tour?
Yes, ma'am. We have several people who are already booked. Everything's ready to go, and it's on my website. And all you have to do is click the button, and you're in.
So we didn't say when it is.
The first segment starts on September 8th, and we end on November 5th.
I'd like to take a part of it. That would be so much fun. But for us to even find that much time, I don't even know. But we've been talking about doing some of it. How many guides do you usually have on a tour like that for 25 people? How many, when I say guides, how much support do they have?
Right. On most of our smaller tours, we run it with two guides up to 12, well, up to 10 people for sure. Sometimes over that, we'll add a third guide, especially for the cycling, because we'll add a guide that does just the van. For this 25 people, I anticipate between 5 and 6 support people. We'll have designated sag stops along the way, so we'll have a van there to service people as they ride by, and we will have some guides who are on the trail with the bikers, and then we'll have some extra support staff just to transport the luggage and a few extra details like that.
You did mention something before that I wanted to circle back to, and you said the word Adirondacks.
Yes.
Are you doing an Adirondack tour?
We do have both a hiking and a cycling Adirondacks tour on the calendar right now. That's where I grew up, hiking in the Adirondacks, so that's very near and dear to me. I don't think there's any other tour company that does a multi-day, fully supported hiking tour in the high peaks of the Adirondacks.
So you mentioned hiking, which we didn't talk at all about that. You do offer hiking as well as cycling. Do you offer any combinations?
Absolutely. We offer multi-sport tours. The company started out with only cycling, and then they got some people who had done several cycling, and it was those guests that came to the owners and said, you know, you really should do some hiking. And so the first hiking tour they added in was down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, and we continue to offer that tour every year. In fact, our specialty is a rim-to-rim tour where you hike all the way to the bottom, you stay at Phantom Ranch, which is the only place you can stay in the Grand Canyon without camping, and then you hike up to the other side. So a rim-to-rim tour. But now we've expanded. We have hiking tours in easily 80% of all hikeable national parks in the U.S. So we go all over on hiking tours.
Is there a different strategy with hiking tours? Do you have fewer people? Can you accommodate more people?
We can still do up to 12. I wouldn't do a larger tour like this biking one. I wouldn't try to do 25. That's too many to take on a trail. 10 really is an ideal number. It's a perfect number to have people out there and not kind of overwhelm the area. And it always has two guides, so people can go at their own pace. They don't have to, you know, always stay in a clump group like that. And let's see, you asked about combination tours. I do run a number of multi-sport tours. In Colorado is my favorite one because not only do we do some road biking and some mountain biking and some hiking, I add in some kayaking. I add in a choice day where you can go rafting or hot air ballooning, just a whole lot of combinations there. And I also have one in South Dakota that does a whole lot of different activities, including biking on the Mickelson Trail and swimming in Sylvan Lake and biking through the tunnels and visiting Mount Rushmore. So those are really extra fun tours.
I guess this is going to be the, you know, elephant in the room question, but how many of these tours do you think you'll be able to actually accomplish in 2021?
Not many before June. And I've kept my calendar a little bit smaller this year because I don't want to be out there pretending, you know, I can do hundreds of tours, which I don't anyway, but
right.
You know, I'll be able to run about 20 overall for the year. And for my 40th anniversary next year, I plan to put up our 40 favorite tours on the calendar.
What a great idea.
Absolutely.
So I had two more questions before we tell people how to find out more. And one is about the bikes. If you bring your own bicycle, are these mainly on the road tours? Are there gravel tours included or off-road?
So I have a couple answers to that. Most of our bike tours are on road, and we recommend a road bike, although, you know, it's the gravel bike is getting so much more popular, just as far as a wider tire giving you a little bit more comfortable ride. We have a few tours that are on rail trails. We have an itinerary in Steamboat, Colorado that's specifically a gravel bike tour. It's all on gravel roads. So we do have a little bit of those combinations. And then I will say for the East Coast Greenway, it is not 100% paved. It's mostly paved. The northern sections have more of the rail trails that are unpaved.
Right.
But anything, a gravel bike or a hybrid bike are perfect on those. They can still easily go on the road and they can hit this. It's not mountain biking by any means. You know, it's flat level gravel paths, rail trails kind of things.
Right.
I am a specialized dealer, so if you rent a bike from me, I have three different types of bicycles. I have the traditional road bike, I have the gravel bike, and I have the hybrid bike.
Well, the last thing, of course, and the most important thing, is to let listeners know how they can find out more about Timberline Adventures.
Absolutely. Best way is to go straight to our website, which is timberline-adventures.com. And you can always give us a phone call. We're happy to talk to anybody on the phone. So our phone number is 1-800-417-2453. But definitely check out the website. Lots of pretty pictures to look at, if nothing else.
Oh, yeah, no, there's lots of stuff going on out there. Everything's pretty well discussed. You know, you've got all kinds of stuff there. And there's a newsletter. Tell me about your newsletter. How often do you send that out?
We send a general newsletter about once a month at this point, and then we send updates to people who have expressed interest in special things. You know, if you're specifically a cyclist, we have a cyclist-only page that we'll send out once a month. And if you've called in or if you've clicked on some of our links to special tours, then we'll send out more information about those specific tours. And you can sign up for the newsletter on the website.
Right. It's right at the top of the page. There is a link for newsletter sign up. Well, Barb, this has just been a very interesting conversation. I love talking with tour owners and guides, and knowing that tours are coming back in 2021 makes me very happy. I still think it's one of the best ways to take a vacation and to see. Yeah, it is. And I also think it's interesting that you do all North American tours. You do one in Hawaii, I see, but I would consider that still part of the country, I guess.
Part of our country. Yeah, that is one thing. We don't try to expand. We're not going to go all over the world like other companies are trying to be everything to everybody. We really focus on North America, and that's what we do well.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me. I hope you have a great 2021, and I will keep my eye on that East Coast Greenway tour. I hope you have a very successful booking season.
Well, thanks for having me, Diane, and we would love to see you on at least a little bit of that tour.
Oh, that would be so much fun. We'll see what the boss says. He's pretty busy. It's a pretty busy cycling season already, you know.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see. Thanks so much. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. Have
Alrighty.
A good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Barb Hoyt is the owner of Timberline Adventures. If you are interested in learning more about the company and the tours, you can log on to timberline-adventures.com. My thanks to Barb and to Victoria Monroe for joining me this week. Next week, we'll be wrapping up the National Bike Summit that was held earlier this month, including what Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg had to say. We'll also have a discussion about the mandatory helmet law in Kings County, Washington, with Paul Tolmay and Ethan Campbell. If you love Irish music, and of course Wednesday is St. Patrick's Day, you can tune in to WJCU 88.7 FM or log on to WJCU.org and hear the 25th Annual Irish Music Marathon, hosted by Greg Priddy. And when we say marathon, we mean marathon. It's 18 hours of great Irish music. So thank you for listening. Please remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite app. You can also join our ongoing conversations on the Facebook page or leave a comment about any of our shows or guests on our blog, OutspokenCyclist.com. I hope you have a great week. Stay safe. Stay well. And remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show, and we welcome your thoughts and comments. We'll be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and most other podcast apps and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.